Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We need to see if that's a gimmick rose.
He just won a rose. Like he's a, hey, Sam Kennedy, will you accept this rose? He said yes.
Or is it like the ones that like the Shriners will have?
I'm going to say like, it's wah, real. Wah. No. I'm going to say it's a real rose. Like, you can't roll in on opening day with a fake rose.
Like, does it do the
maybe
like,
it is fake.
Like, no.
It is.
I just want to know if the president of the Boston Red Sox and the Fenway Sports Group would be walking around with one of those roses that you squeeze and it squirts water on somebody. Hey, John Henry, it's opening day. Waka, waka. There you go.
Yeah. No, I think this is to honor our great friend Timmy Wakefield.
Oh, there you go. There I go. Like that. Yeah. There you go.
So, yeah, it's going to be a special day. We just came from a memorial remembrance service this morning and with his teammates from 2004. Very emotional day, but great day to celebrate as well.
Yeah, it's mixed, right? Because you're celebrating winning.
Yeah.
You are celebrating what is a seminal moment in this ownership group's sort of tenure. And yet it's mixed in with the sadness of Tim and Stacy Wakefield at the same time. So I'm sure there's got to be a lot of tough emotions for some of those guys who were a part of that championship run. And how could you not love Wake? Just a great guy.
Incredible. And he and Stacy embodied everything that is great about Boston and Boston sports. Their legacy will extend far beyond the Red Sox and World Series championships. It's about the Dana-Farber. It's about supporting each other, lifting each other up. They were so into the Patriots and the Celtics and the Bruins and just the goodness that comes from our sports community. And we'll miss them terribly. We'll celebrate them today. There's been so much loss. We lost Larry Lucchino, who is a friend and mentor and a leader to so many of us as well. So it's been a tough time, but a lot of the conversation this morning with Kevin Millar and Mike Timlin and Manny Ramirez, it was unbelievable to hear these guys talk about the importance of celebrating while also grieving and mourning at the same time. And it's a contradiction in terms, but it really does apply today.
And Sam, did I see that Cora said he's going to go full uniform, right? In honor,
bull crap.
No, wait. Am I right on this? Did you see this also?
I did. And Alex, he comes up with new and different ways to inspire, motivate, lead, change things up. I went no tie today. I was like, I'm going to the cask and flagon. Wearing a tie. I mean, the rose is one thing.
I'm not wearing a tie.
No. I'm going to get killed if I walk. They're already, angry enough about the offseason. I don't need to give them more reason.
That's what I was going to say. How happy are you that the offseason is over?
Oh.
Is there a happier person in this city that the offseason is over?
Well,
I see you side-eye Ken over there.
Yeah.
There's him and Curtis. They've been trying to take their shots at you.
Yeah, well, I think the folks at the Dunkin' Donuts on Mass Ave, where I go every morning, they're happier because they're there every day. I'm there every day. Different customers coming in, complaining, upset, understandably, giving us grief. I think they're the happiest people. So, no, we're really happy. It's time to focus on what we have on the field versus what we don't have. And it was a good start. Obviously, it's really early, but exciting to see some of the transformation of this staff under the leadership of Alex and Andrew Bailey and Justin Willard and the impact that they've had. The name of this game is and always has been pitching. And we've gotten away from it the last couple of years. So hopefully we can keep this team in more games this year.
Sam Kennedy is the president of the Red Sox here with Gresham Fourier at the Cask. And you signed Sedan Rafaela to an 8-year, $50 million contract, as it's been reported. I don't think the money is so much the big part of it for me within this question. It's more the strategy. Was this something that just came up, that it's taking advantage of opportunity? Was this a concerted strategy going in? Because this is a little bit of a departure from, I know, the way teams have usually gone. And you're the Red Sox. You have money. You can normally wait these things out if you want.
Yeah, it very much has been a concerted strategy to go out and sign some of our own players that we're very optimistic about, guys who want to be here. I think one of the things that we've had a great 2.5 decades here, one of the things that I think has been very underrated, underappreciated, especially when you get together with a group of guys that we got together with last night and they're going to be here today, is players who want to be here. This place, as you guys know, isn't for everybody. Like, it's for us. We love it. I mean, we love talking trash at Dunkin' Donuts and, you know, getting booed off the stage at FanFest. And, you know, I mean, you have a...
You sure you love that?
If you're from New England, you've done been dog cussed before.
Come on. Give me a break. Like, if you don't deliver, if you don't win, we're pissed, right? I mean, that's the way it goes. And so you want players who want to be here, and identifying guys like Brian Baio, guys like Garrett Whitlock, guys like Sedan Rafaela, people who you think are going to be a part of that core going forward for the next 5-10 years is really important to lock them up. I think we actually got away from that. We were doing more of those extensions, team extensions with guys under control earlier rather than waiting, because by definition, once you wait until free agency, it's just a slippery slope. It's a dangerous game. You know, I think about guys who – I'd be a terrible GM, by the way, because I'd be trying to sign everybody, because you fall in love with these players.
What are you talking about? Red Sox fans are just like, get in the role then, for crying out loud.
No, it's important to have separate some of that emotion, because those of us who have been here a long time, you know, my job is to lead the entire organization, to lead us forward in every aspect. The baseball operations people need to be incredibly disciplined. It's cutthroat. It's hard. It's difficult. And separating that emotion is really, really hard. We talked about it with the 04 guys last night, though. There has been a change and a move in baseball. It's become so analytically focused, so data-driven. And I don't necessarily think that's serving us well, especially when you come to Boston.
That's what I want to hear.
And you think about what happens to a guy's heart rate when he's standing on the mound, you know, trying to close out a game in the 2013 postseason, or standing on the mound at Dodger Stadium trying to close out a game to win another World Series in 2018. I don't know how you measure that. I really don't, other than observation, other than spending time with players, really getting to know them, see them in those situations. So anyway, back to locking up homegrown guys, it's really important that it's a two-way street. Players that want to be here, we want those guys a part of our organization, and a lot of guys don't want to be here, and that's okay.
So we're talking to Sam Kennedy, and Sam, talking about guys that want to be here, talking about, you know, building from within, signing your own players, you know, draft, develop, mentor. Why not, if that is the case, if this is the track that you guys are going down with the team, why not lock up a guy like Cora? Why keep him on a almost like a lame duck coach going into the last year of his contract?
It's a great and fair question, because he's had great success here. Everybody knows how we feel about him personally, how those of us who have been here with him feel about him as a manager. When we made the change, the very difficult change with Chaim Bloom, and we brought in Craig Breslow, it's critical that our chief baseball officer, our head of baseball operations, have the authority to make that decision. I don't want to put it all on Brez, but we are putting it on Brez. It's his decision. He will make that decision, and ultimately Alex will make that decision. The two of them need to have some time working together. It's different. They were players together. They have a good relationship. Their families know each other. But they need to see not only an offseason, spring training, and the season, and whether that's all of the season, some of the season, we'll see what they decide in terms of that conversation. But the emotions of the season, we already know. Like,
good.
We should be 10-0 right now, right? I mean,
it feels that way.
This is the coolest interview, by the way, you've ever done. No tie, dropping S bombs.
No. S-bomb.
This is great. I love it.
Sorry, Mom. But we, you know, they need some time together to see what that relationship looks like. You know, hopefully we're not there, but an extended losing streak, or, I mean, look, we're going through adversity right now. Trevor Story going down, Lucas Giolito went down. So they need to see how that relationship works.
It's the most sacred relationship in professional sports. The general manager and the manager, the coach, the GM, the head of player, I don't know, whatever you call it in your sport, head of player personnel.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it's sacred. And those two individuals need to be on the same page. They need to trust each other. And that's not my call as CEO of the organization. It's not John Henry, Tom Werner. We're going to have our feelings. We're going to be very, very involved in the discussion. But ultimately, it's Craig Breslow's decision. And so the timing was such. It was difficult. You know, you wish Alex had more term left on his contract. Timing was very difficult.
And he seems fine with it, too.
Yeah,
he does seem fine with it.
He's being a pro about it.
He's a pro's pro. Look, he's been here. He understands. And he understands that concept. He knows who he works for. He knows his boss is the general manager. And he respects that. He's a baseball lifer through and through. He gets it. He's been a player here. He's won here. He's won here as a player. He's won here as a manager. He totally gets it. So, and I'm really appreciative, and so is Brez, of how he's handled it, and I'm appreciative of how Brez has handled with him being open and honest and transparent. So it's a really good sign. I think it bodes well for the future of their relationship, but that's why we haven't done an extension.
Well, we know you got a busy day, and we know you got to run. What has you most excited for what fans are about to see over the next couple of hours? I know you've been telling people to get in the seats early.
Yeah, I cannot thank Sarah McKenna enough. I think Red Sox Nation knows Sarah since 2002. She has been sort of coordinating everything that happens at the ballpark behind the scenes. She's got probably the most emotional. There's been a lot of emotion in our 2.5 decades here. I think people are going to cry. They're going to laugh. They're going to remember what it means to be a World Series champion. They're going to be reminded that anything is possible, that coming down from 3-0 to the New York Yankees was possible, and that anything can happen. It'll be a very emotional day. But most of all, I'm focused on Brian Bello and getting guys out today. And really, we got to keep this pitching approach going. And it is, again, I'd be a terrible analytics person. I think it's contagious. I think these guys feed off of each other, and I'm excited for our fans to see this new approach to pitching, and hopefully we'll keep it going today.
Actually, I did forget one more thing. How did you eclipse yesterday, or not at all?
Oh, my God, this is great, because there are some people that are so into the eclipse, and there are other people who could care less.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I could care less. Sorry to my wife and
so
my.
So you didn't
daughter.
Go on the roof or anything?
No, my wife drove our daughter's in college up in Vermont. Our wife drove, you know, whatever it was, through the mountains, hills, fields, got there. They experienced it together. I think I was sitting at my desk sending emails.
And
like,
I'll tell you,
no interest.
And that's a no heat excuse for you either,
right?
Because she made the choice to go, but you're working.
My daughter is in Vermont.
Oh, yeah.
Does she go to University of Vermont?
No, she goes to Middlebury College. Yeah, yep, yep.
Oh, so good school.
By the way, I got a proud dad. National champs. Field hockey. Division III, NCAA.
Right. Doesn't matter.
Welcome
very
to the club.
Proud.
It
very
all,
proud.
It all
very
counts. Proud. All the
it
parents all get the jackets
That's
either it. Way.
That's
so
and, yeah, sweatshirt, the hoodies.
Exactly. There you
the
go.
Hats.
Good stuff. Sam,
thanks.
Good to see
thanks,
you.
Sam.
Have a great day
great
today.
To
thanks a bunch
great
there. Sam
guys.
Kennedy,
Thank
president
you.
Of the Red Sox. And this is the front office report. Sam is brought to us by Timeout Market, Boston's best eating and drinking destination in the Fenway, all under one roof, timeoutmarket.com, by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh. And of course,
it's a tip for Sam.
So instead of Sam being on the Harbor One hotline.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So we got Anik, who everybody on Twitch can see, except he's just joining us on the phone. I had a rock joke teed up, Anik, with all the merch you're moving and things like that. And then, you know, we can't get you on the clear signal. But good morning, buddy. How are you?
Well, at least I can see your faces, and there's absolutely no delay. It's a highlight for me during a pay-per-view week like this, obviously, to be with my boys there in Boston. And it's crazy. There's so much technically that can go wrong. Like, I built a home studio for my podcast, and every other show, my Rodecaster goes sideways and we can't even get on the air. So I know there's a lot of issues with Zoom or StreamYard, but it's UFC 300 fight week.
Oh, right? My God.
And
I can't
John,
wait.
And I remember last time we talked to you, the amount of prep work that you go through is pretty substantive, right? And I'm curious, like, are you in a hotel room right now? You're in your hotel in Vegas? Okay. Do you have, like, a book of notes that, you know, your producer gives you as far as all the fighters that you can show us? Or is it, like, proprietary? Can you not show it? You can jump off. Yeah, jump off screen.
Get out of there. Exactly.
I feel like, Gresh, I feel like it's going to look like a phone book.
Oh, no. I'm with you. It is. There it is. Yeah, you can see. It's like a massive. There it is.
Oh, so that's your notes for one fight, right?
Right.
Okay.
So basically what I do, and I've been handwriting my notes as a play-by-play guy since 2009, and it's probably an antiquated system, but it hasn't failed me yet. But the first thing the UFC generates is the UFC fighter bios, and then I transfer whatever I think is useful to my fighter card, and then I'm adding notes to that card all week, things I pick up either on UFC Embedded, maybe I run into a coach, something in the fighter meeting. But oftentimes, play-by-play guys will tell you they use like 15% of what they actually prep. But by handwriting all of this stuff, I can be looking at the action, looking at the octagon, and a lot of this stuff gets committed to memory. So it's a pretty exhaustive process. This show actually is a little bit easier to prepare for, believe it or not, because oftentimes on pay-per-views, as Gresh well knows, we'll feature like four or five UFC newcomers and some upcoming prospects, and I got to do a deep dive. We got nothing but star power, you know, 12 current or former champions this weekend. So it's been a little bit of an easier navigation, believe it or not, for UFC 300.
Well, I think the other thing that helps you, too, is you're working with the same people all the time, you know? Like, you're getting Rogan and DC pretty much every time. And if Bisping slides in there, he's pretty seamless getting in and out. That's got to help you as a play-by-play guy to know what you've got beside you every time you sit down.
It's a great point, Gresh. Even though they haven't come out and sort of publicly stated that it's going to be me, Rogan, and DC for pay-per-views domestically, that's always what they are going to try to do. Joe doesn't travel with us. But, Gresh, you know, in our private conversations and Christian, I've often pined for that, right, to have a regular broadcast team. As much as I have loved working with, I think, 19 different MMA analysts over the last 15 years or so, I think for a lot of us, we want that Joe Buck, Troy Aikman booth that we can mold and really grow and consistently develop chemistry. And, you know, sometimes we'll go 2 months without seeing Joe because we're flying internationally. So in a perfect world, if it was up to me, it'd be the same team every show.
So you mentioned that this card is pretty good, right? Compared to, you know, UFC 100, 200. It's like, this is like, they're really going out of the way to make sure like every single fight is like a great fight. What makes it, just because these are former champions at every different weight class, you got a couple of the women fighting each other, a couple of Chinese fighters, I think, who are pretty good. I was watching some videos of them. Scary, I would say, just watching their fights. Why is it so big?
Hit on that, China versus China, because for the first time in UFC history, we have two Chinese fighters competing against one another for UFC Undisputed Championship, and I don't know that there's any about the overall evolution and global expansion of mixed martial arts than the footprint that this promotion has made in China. But Christian, like, Davison Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt are two former UFC champions. Davison Figueiredo is a future UFC Hall of Famer, and he's going to hit the tunnel at 3:10 p.m. Pacific. That is the first fight of the night. And UFC 301 in Rio, May 4th, Davison Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt could have been the damn co-main event, right? Like, when you look at this fight card, this is not promotionally hyperbolic whatsoever, and Gresh will back me up on this. We have 13 fights, probably 10 co-main events and 3 to 4 fights that could be main events. Kayla Harrison is a 2-time Olympic judo gold medalist from the United States of America. She's never fought in the UFC. She's going to fight in the middle of the afternoon on the prelims. She's not even the featured prelims. So it's truly an embarrassment of riches, and you know, I didn't call UFC 100 nor 200, so needless to say, I'm excited to be in the building.
Well, and you should be. And the voice of UFC, John Anik, here with us. You can also see him with us on Twitch. The three fights leading into the main card on the prelims, as you mentioned, Holman Harrison, Calvin Kattar, Aljamain Sterling, Jiří Procházka, and Alexander Rakic. I can't say it like you. I'm close enough. But those three, if you put those three fights on the pay-per-view, nobody would complain. Those are pay-per-view quality fights that you're going to be able to flip on ESPN. And you guys are on main ESPN for the prelims, correct, John?
All 4 hours. So begin PM there, Eastern Standard Time in New England, we will start. It'll be 4 hours of prelims on ESPN. And you're right, Aljamain Sterling, is on paper the most accomplished UFC bantamweight champion of all time. Now he moves up to featherweight to face Calvin Kattar, Methuen, Massachusetts guy. His last five UFC fights have all been main events, right? And those guys can't even scratch the main card. And this was obviously the goal promotionally, to make this the deepest card in UFC history. And I called UFC 299 in Miami last month, and that was the best fight card I had ever been assigned, at least on paper. And with respect, this one does put it to shame. So we're excited. We'll be on a headset for 7 hours, and just can't wait to get to Saturday night. It's going to fly by.
Yeah, but Foyer, as a home game for Anik, is a, you know, in Miami last time out, he got in a car, not a plane. Oh, that's a big deal for my man Anik, who's flying all over the globe.
Yeah, you mentioned the guy, Calvin Kattar. Would you tell me about him and where he's from? Methuen?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, right, because I have a special place in my hat for these Boston athletes, but Calvin Kattar is so no-nonsense that I don't even think this dude likes me, but he's the best fighter probably. He and Rob Font representing the New England cartel. Tyson Chartier is the head coach there, and I think Calvin Kattar, at least right now, I mean, Kayla Harrison, the Olympic judoka, she moved to Boston when she was 16. I don't know if we can claim her in Massachusetts, but I think right now Calvin Kattar is the Bay State's best hope for UFC gold and glory.
You mentioned
tremendous cardio.
Go ahead, John. It blipped. I thought you were done. You're good, brother. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, tremendous cardio, but he has been out for a couple of years. But he's also welcoming a bantamweight, a naturally smaller guy, up to 145 pounds. So huge opportunity for Kattar to potentially inch closer to that top three and, you know, maybe set up that first elusive shot at the world title. Kattar's been close, right? He's been very close to the championship. Hasn't fought for the belt yet.
So, Anik, you mentioned Kayla Harrison. It's Holly Holm and Kayla Harrison. Kayla Harrison is making her UFC debut, was in other promotions, making good money, but now it's time to kind of step up to the big leagues now. And you've got a Hall of Fame boxer in Holly Holm against a judoka in Kayla Harrison, who's Olympic level at that. So, Anik, what gives in this fight, and how big is it that Harrison has finally made it to UFC?
Huge deal. Fascinating matchup just in terms of the combat sports history for both of these women. Harrison, obviously, two-time Olympic gold medalist. And Holly Holm, not just a Women's Boxing Hall of Famer, but in 2022, she was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. She was the number one pound-for-pound boxer in three divisions for a long time. So, tremendous backdrop to that fight. Holly Holm is 42 years of age. We sat down with Kayla Harrison yesterday, and she sort of intimated that Holly is good at not fighting and still sort of winning fights. And I think that's part of the reason why this fight is not on the main card. Holly Holm can make a lot of noises and feint and laterally move and be sort of inactive while actually fighting. So I think that's part of the reason why this is a prelim fight. But this is exactly what women's mixed martial arts needed right now. Kayla Harrison moving to the UFC. I don't know that she was wholly expectant that this was ever going to happen, because the UFC doesn't have a lightweight division, 155 pounds. We don't really have a women's featherweight division, right? Kayla Harrison has never competed at 135 pounds in her life. She fought once at featherweight. That was in 2020. She's been primarily a lightweight. And she's going to have to make 136 pounds here on Friday. So for me, that's really the pre-fight narrative, the fight before the fight, to see how Kayla looks on the scale, to see if she can hydrate properly. I would never put it past an Olympian like her, but she's got to make weight first, Gresh.
Yeah, so we're talking to John Anik, the voice of UFC. And I'm curious, you talk about all these former Olympians and this and that, and the Olympics coming up this summer. I am curious if there's any discussion whatsoever about ever making this like the Olympics adopting MMA?
I love the question, my man. So it's a complicated exercise. I think promotionally for the UFC, it would be a little bit difficult. Also, you would have to probably tweak the rule sets. Not that you would have to invoke headgear necessarily, but you'd probably have to take elbows out of the equation. And then, you know, how do you sort of navigate the professional versus amateur component of it and the monetary component of it? So I think there are a lot of hurdles. But you're right, Christian. There are so many athletes that would like nothing more than to represent their country in an MMA setting and be able to chase an Olympic gold medal. So we used to talk about this a lot, believe it or not, like back on MMA Live when I was in ESPN 2009, and hasn't happened yet. I'm not holding my breath, but it's a great thought.
I know that there's, for the BMF title, Anik, we've got Justin Gaethje against Max Holloway. Listen, Gaethje's a fan favorite. He's a made man, all that stuff. But my God, the way the MMA community reacts to Max Holloway, regardless of who he's against, it's quite a phenomenon, John.
It's a great point, Gresh. And it's crazy to think that Max Holloway might actually be more popular than Justin Gaethje. I mean, Max Holloway's public approval rating in 2024 is absolutely absurd. And he's still on the cusp of regaining his undisputed UFC featherweight championship, but I think he looks great here at lightweight this week, and I think it's going to be really telling in terms of his fighting future how he handles this fight with Gaethje up 10 pounds, because he hasn't fought at lightweight since 2019, but he's never been confused as being a small guy. But you're right, the resonation of both of these athletes with the fan base is truly spectacular, and I hate when, you know, analysts like me trot out the line like, oh, I hate the one guy has to lose. But I do think that applies to this fight. You know, both of these guys could be fighting for the undisputed world title. This BMF title is a really cool thing. Baddest mother effer, all of that. But these guys should be fighting for the undisputed world title. So hopefully they get out of this one clean.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those where whenever they award whomever wins the BMF belt, like both guys could stand in the ring and hold their hands up and they're going to get applause, because I think there will be respect for the battle between the two. So can you just quickly map out what your next 48 hours look like, so the people understand, like, it's not just Anik rolls out and sits down with his note cards and starts calling fights. There's everything that goes into it. And I don't think, unlike last time we were in Vegas out there, Anik, I don't think they're going to be filming a movie all of a sudden where it's like, oh, here's Anik to come out for Roadhouse.
That's right.
And me and my kids are going nuts. We couldn't believe it.
Yeah, well, thankfully there's no Roadhouse shoot this week. And it sounds trite, but it's totally a sprint to the finish. Or show has a lot more writing for television than the average play-by-play gig. You know, I haven't done major college football since 2015, but, you know, you scribble down your show open on a piece of paper, you deliver it, you're not really doing any sort of writing. So we do a lot of writing, so a lot of the next 48 hours for me will be writing. I am on standby in case Dana White can't make the press conference later today. I do have a shoot with our British affiliate TNT Sports later today, and morning weigh-in tomorrow. We'll shoot UFC live for a full hour on ESPN2 on Friday. I got an appearance for Cuervo Friday night. I'll be back to Bang Keys from like 9-1 a.m. and then the hay will be in the barn. And as you guys well know, all my anxieties in the preparation. Saturday arrives, we're ready to go and perform.
So the first fight is that you said 3:10 Pacific time, right? And then you will end what, midnight? How long will you go?
So I wish. Yeah, about probably, yeah. So I actually go and handle part of the post show as well, believe it or not. So, yeah, I mean, you got to maximize your earning prime, I guess, right?
Well,
so I'll
you're
get
doing
off
it.
After 8 hours. And I'll go up to the post-fight show for about 45 minutes. And, yeah, so it'll be about 8.5, 9 hours of talking. And, yeah, I guess midnight Pacific, 3 a.m. Eastern time.
So I'll what do you done. Do for your voice? We get maybe some tea with honey, maybe a little lemon in that tea. Like, what do you do to make sure you don't get, like, you don't lose your voice? Well, I don't know.
Cigar.
All he's yapping and yelling and saying, Dunsky, Dunsky,
yeah.
Dunsky.
I don't know. Cigars and whiskey work good for some.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think I've done some permanent damage to my vocal cords, and a lot of that is voicing video games where you're just doing hours upon hours of repetition. But, you know, I used to bang those monster sugar-free energy drinks, and I was a big Diet Coke guy, and then I read that aspartame can paralyze your vocal cords. So I moved over to American Black Tea,
there you
which
go.
Is Coca-Cola Classic.
Look at this guy.
No, I drink Black Tea.
Look at this guy.
Coke Classic. I know, right?
Yeah. Coca-Cola Classic is really American Black Tea. But, no, I'll drink tea with honey. I'll drink black coffee, but no citrus, because that can also go the opposite way with the vocal cords. But I do think,
good.
Like,
this is good information.
Can attest, you can – and you guys can speak to this, like, you sort of condition yourself to whatever it is that is your devil, right? So, you know, when Gresh was doing 5 hours solo radio, right, you sort of condition yourself and your voice and your mind and your body to whatever the exercise is. But, dude, I'm toast at the end of these weeks.
Oh, yeah. You know what? After fights, I don't even try, because I know that Anik's gassed and you're getting out at, you know, by the time he's done with the post, it's probably 11:30 Pacific time, maybe. Ooh. That card gets over 10:15. By the time he gets up to where the set is and all that stuff, and they bring everybody up there, oh yeah, I just there's no chance. I got a better chance of seeing his twin brother out stumbling on the Vegas Strip at midnight than our guy John, who is sleeping. By the way, I encourage you, if you're a big MMA fan, go to johnanik.com. All of the merch is up there. This guy's merching like the Rock. I'm telling you. Go get the One More Sleep shirts. There's special ones for UFC 300 as well. Very good stuff at johnanik.com. Thank you for dealing with the technical issues, brother. We appreciate you. Have a great call, and hopefully I bump into you out there over the next couple of days.
I absolutely love you guys. Thank you so much for having me and giving the UFC some time. And I'll let you go with this. The highlight of my 2024, Kristaps Porzingis went on to johnannick.com and bought a damn One More Sleep t-shirt.
Oh, look at that.
And so he now, gets, you know what? Now we're going to have to go get one.
No,
now.
You know what? And part of the reason you mentioned that,
I'm going to go buy one.
If Porzingis ain't getting a freebie, nobody is. Yeah, no, damn it. So go buy it.
It's gonna be, I was just going to, hey, send some to Leo there, and Birmingham Drive.
I'll make sure, when I buy, I'll make sure to buy some for Billy and Nick as well. Andy, thank you, brother. We appreciate you. We know you're busy. Talk to you soon, friend. Thanks.
Thank you, boys. You're the best.
Hey, everybody, it's the Jerod Mayo Top 10 Things You Can't Say list. Because, you know, do your job has now been erased down there for you.
Mm. You can't do it anymore.
Nope, no more. So, no, yeah. So Will is there, and I forgot to check in with, like, the people at the pro shop on this. But is there liquidated inventory of the shirts with the phrase, do your job on them?
Or, you know, sometimes they will sell the hoodie with the cut-off sleeves.
Oh, that's right.
They would do that. You know, because this was inspired by, you know, the Jabril Peppers little press conference on Monday where somebody asked him about, you know, phrases and how things are different. He said, do your job is nowhere to be found yet. Maybe it is, he says. I'm paraphrasing for Jabril Peppers. But, you know, I haven't seen it yet. So if you're going to get rid of do your job, which is basically Roll Tide, which is basically Hook 'em Horns, which is Notre Dame's version of Play Like a Champion, then you really kind of have to get rid of everything that Bill used to say. Like, and now there is a long, long list.
That's right.
We did it yesterday, like impromptu, but then we actually whittled it down to 10 or 11. Is this one going to go to 11?
Oh, no.
Are we going to spinal tap this?
We are not.
All right, so it goes to 10.
We've got the, from the home office in Bald Head, Maine, ladies and gentlemen, the top 10 things Jerod Mayo can't say, a la do your job. Here we go. Number 10, nobody works harder than, insert name here.
Fill in the blank.
Nobody works harder than Cam does.
How often can you say that? Because I have heard him say this about every single person that retired, every person that the media would want some information. He's probably said it about Mac Jones.
He might have said it about
they
you.
They all can't be the hardest worker. So who ultimately is the guy that works that worked the hardest? And how do you know what he was doing when that person left?
Nobody works harder than Bill.
I love that one, too, because, like, hey, nobody works harder than Cam. No, I would like to say there were some people at that point in time that definitely worked harder than Cam Newton.
Number 9 on the list of things Mayo can't say, a la do your job, I'm not a doctor.
One of my favorites.
And I'm not a doctor.
One of my favorites, because it really was his ultimate get-out-of-jail-free card. Hey, what about this guy's injury? Listen, you guys, I'm not a doctor, right? What was the line that he said? Like, I don't do surgery.
Oh, yeah, I'm not a doctor. I think it's I'm not the trainers. They don't call plays. I don't do surgery.
Yeah, one of my favorite. So Jerod Mayo cannot say I'm not a doctor.
Number 8.
I'm talking about open heart surgery here.
There it is. That's a very good one. Number 8, I don't answer hypotheticals. I think Jerod Mayo will be happy to answer every hypothetical that's going to come up.
You're going to give me a bunch of hypothetical situations, and I don't know what those hypotheticals are, so I'm not going to get into that.
I think this is one where, it's not going to be a problem for him.
He's gonna want the hypothetical they're going so oppo. He would have to welcome the hypotheticals.
Yeah, in his head, he's gonna sit there and go, "Well, Bill would have said this because Jerod would know just as well as we would know.
Yeah,
what his default setting would be with a certain question on a certain player. So pretty good right now. So that's our three. That's nobody works harder than fill in the blank. I'm not a doctor, and I don't answer hypotheticals.
Number 7. On the top 10 things that Jerod Mayo can't say, a la do your job, number 7, the injury report comes out later today.
Well, we'll get the injury report today.
One of my personal favorites. Like on a Monday, you would ask him about, even if you interview him, if you talk to him or in a press conference, you would talk to him.
Yeah.
And he's just so slick. Listen, when the injury report comes out, I'll tell you. I don't know. The injury report did, like, I don't know. No clue.
I thought of this. Will the Patriots switch sidelines? You got to do everything different, right? So you got to go the other side now.
That is interesting.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, but man, in order for them to get into their locker room at halftime, they'd have to run across the field.
That's right.
To get to the little tunnel.
Boy, we're going to do
what if they
different?
Have to go to the bathroom?
I don't know. Put a portal.
Put a portal. Okay.
Number six. Next man up. Nope. That's a Bill.
I feel like this is going to be really hard for Jerod Mayo to avoid.
I agree.
It's going to be. This is not. It was not fair by us. But hey, listen.
It
was part of a silo at one point in time.
Look, you're painting over everything down there. Those Super Bowl trophies.
You can't do next man up.
Put a coat of Sherwin Williams right over it. We're starting over. Number five on the top 10 list of things Mayo can't say, a la do your job. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
Not a chance in hell.
Do you think Mayo can avoid saying that? Not a chance. I'm with you.
No way. Do you say it is what it is a lot? I think I used it maybe 10 times already this morning.
Yeah, well, you're
that's
you're
how you know somebody's
hot.
Like truly defeated. When you hear it is what it is, you're basically giving up.
Right? You might as well just say uncle. Uncle.
There's no way that Mayo can avoid that.
Because there's going to
be. It is what it is.
I would say, and we should keep track of this and give him demerits.
We need to check off on the top 10 list.
Yep.
Number four, they're going to have to – they've been taking signs down and painting over stuff down there, and this one's got to go too. Ignore the noise. No, now feed into the noise. We're going to take breaks for social media. So right before practice, you can go on Instagram or whatever if you're in the Patriots locker room. I'm sure they'll upgrade the Wi-Fi as well so they don't affect any of the writers at Patriots.com. Get the good Wi-Fi in there. And you got to go on and look at the at the comments.
This
you're
going to
embrace the noise instead of ignoring the noise.
What if they haven't won a game in 5 weeks?
Embrace the noise.
No.
You're all
he's
against
gonna,
us.
Okay, stop everything. I changed my mind. I meant to say ignore the noise. Yeah, they're ripping us, coach. They're saying this. They're teasing us. They're making fun of us. They don't like us at all. Guys, just ignore the damn it. I can't say it. Bill used to say that. No, this is like it is what it is. These are getting harder for him to avoid. There's no way he can get away with not saying ignore the noise.
A texter says every coach in every sport says all these things.
Well,
do they really?
The Patriots, and they don't, by the way.
Bill Belichick, you mean, you know.
I'm not a doctor.
Right. How about.
What number are we on?
We're on number three on the list of things Mayo can't say, a la do your job. I did what was best for the team.
I do what's best for the football team.
Nope, none of that.
This one's going to be easy.
I know.
This is like trademark. Like, this is such a Bill flex. You know, get out of jail. Well, why'd you do this? Well, just, you know, it just encompasses everything. It's very pretty vague, too, if you really think about it.
It's really interesting because at the end it was, oh, I'm sick of Bill. I'm sick of hearing it is what it is. And now we have people in the whole defending Mayo and all that stuff with the whole – you know, every coach in every sport says that. No, it is what it is. It's pretty connected to Bill. But anyway, number two on the list, and sorry to the texter, but you sent it at the wrong time for this one because I don't know another coach on the planet that had a parade after winning a title.
No days off. No days off. No days off. No days off.
Tell me the coach that says that one.
I wonder, like, after he said his third no days off, and he was like, oh, man, I got to pull the ripcord on this one.
You know what?
It's not working.
You and I were kind of joking around the other day of the new England Patriots.
Yeah.
So you walk into the lobby.
It's like a hologram of,
you want to practice today? Press one or two.
Would you like no days off?
Right. Or
would you like to commit? It's like a cell phone, contract.
Instead of no days off, it'll be which days would you like to take off? And then the number one thing Jerod Mayo's got to avoid, like, a la do your job.
All those questions are out of our control. Not going to worry about any of those. We're trying to control what we can control.
Control what you can control. The number one thing on the top 10 list of things Gerard Mayo can't say, a la do your job.
Mona Lisa veto.
Oh, man. I tell you, this one, control what you can control, it's going to be tough, too. No days off, not a problem. It is what it is. Good luck. I did what's best for the team. You'll be fine with that one. Ignore the noise. No chance. I would say out of the 10 that we listed.
We got to win in all three phases. So.
Oh, that's another one. That didn't make the cut.
Because.
Snap face and Pandorama. And-
All right, now that one probably should have ended up
phases. I can't believe we left three phases off.
No, we have to.
Yeah.
Because that's too coach speaky.
You're right.
You can choose whether you want to say it is what it is or no days off or control what you control. But if you're not winning in all three phases, like, we can't box Mayo in that bad. Like, he's doing a good enough job himself of the whole.
I know. Which one do you think would basically be his biggest crutch? Because basically you're just talking about, okay, can't really explain it too much. Don't want to go into detail. The one that is control what you can control. I mean, guys are going to get hurt. I can't worry about it. I mean, it goes with the hypothetical. He'll never use hypothetical. He'll never use it. That one's not a problem.
But he'll answer them.
He'll never use no date. Yeah. But he'll never be like, yeah, I don't deal in hypotheticals.
I'll tell you the one I think it'll trip him up.
Every throw on a field.
Make every throw.
Well, and we let that one go because, again, that's coachy.
Cutting room floor.
You got to shime it and watch all the film.
Yep.
I think the number four one, ignore the noise. Ignore the noise on the outside. That's going to be a tough one for Mayo to avoid saying because it's not going to be a good year. Regardless of what they do, unless there's a miracle coming, this is going to be another, you know, 4, 5, 6 win season, something like that. So at some point, he's going to have to either roll it out or say, you know, the whole we're aware of the outside noise and we just have to ignore it type thing.
Yeah, we covered that.
Yeah, we covered that. He won't do that either. He won't do. That's another sneaky good one. Yeah, we could like. Hey, I love it when he does the post-game press conference and sometimes guys will go into the locker room, right, and they'll come into Bill's press conference late and because he's so hard to kind of track sometimes. You don't know if he's coming in early. You don't know if he's coming in late. And, okay, so you go get some quotes from the locker room. You come in and Bill's press conference has already started, so you don't hear the question. So you ask him a question, and he just doesn't even bother with it. He's like, listen, I already covered that. Yeah, but I was gone. It's not my problem. I wish he would say that. That's actually a good one. If Bill had the ability to say, it's not my problem, like all the time. Sorry, I was late. I was talking. It's not my problem. Perfect. But I'm going to go with the one. If I'm going to like handicap it.
Sure.
Ignore the noise.
Ignore
it's
the
gonna
noise.
Go to his,
he's
gonna
roll
go to
out.
His go to and control what you could control.
He's here early. He stays late.
Oh yeah, the hardest worker one is good too. Who really is the? If you asked Bill,
yeah,
who really is the hardest worker?
You know,
Troy Brown was the hardest worker. Teddy Bruschi, Kevin Fogg, blah blah blah.
He would
Cam
say
Newton.
Tom Brady.
And I would say Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would.
It's like just the nature of the position.
Nobody works harder than Bill Murray.
than Bill Murray. Not the Bill Murray whose son is an assistant basketball coach.
Practice squad lineman.
That's right. The guy from the guy
from offensive line to defensive line.
Yeah, the guy from William & Mary.
Did he really say that?
Yeah.
Well, listen, I guess if Bill's saying that about you, you probably feel pretty good about yourself.
Nobody works harder than Bill Murray.
Well, he's never said that about me.
He's a great Bill Murray works harder than everybody and still can't get on the field. What does that say?
Well, it just means he's not very good.
Yeah.
But he doesn't mean
he's
not a hard worker.
Yeah, a lot of people work hard.
I mean,
don't blame it on me, Christian.
No, I'm not, Bill.
Now, I know there are some of the Mayo defenders are out kind of jumping on us and the whole, this is childish, da da da. So here's the thing. We knew what Belichick stood for, good or bad, right or wrong, whether you love the press conference or not, you knew either where you stood with him, how Belichick saw things, or there was the, this is what we're all about. What is that with Gerard Mayo? And to the people who are like getting on us, these are things that head coaches have to think about, because clearly there's going to be a bunch of guys in that room who were coached by Bill Belichick last year. So how does Gerard Mayo say essentially the same thing without saying it the way Bill did? And that is part of the reason, y'all, why we are poking fun at this, and why when you hear that the do your job stuff is gone, again, I get the whole it's a new era, but are we painting over the mural of the six championships too?
So we'll probably take those down.
So we'll leave that there. And there's the reminder of the excellence that used to be. But you know what? That pesky do your job slogan, which, oh, by the way, we put on T-shirts, sweatshirts, and underwear and sold to you while you were willing to lap it up. Now it is the whole, what is it now? Seriously. I almost feel like it's like the Mayo era, and then it's just lines to be filled in later on a T-shirt as to the whole, What do we stand for under Gerard Mayo, and how are we going to say it differently than the Big Bad Wolf? That's why we mock.
Christian, well, really, you know, coming out of Colorado, I thought was not elite, but, you know, but good.
Where did that even come from?
I don't know. It's in your old folder.
He's never been more wrong. He's never been more wrong. And here's the thing with Mayo. You're not going to have a clue. I think Mayo is obviously figuring it out as he goes.
No question.
I don't think he knows. I think he's going to be caught between being his own man and then being conditioned and brought up in the Bill, you know, coaching tree. I think all these coaches kind of, you know, when they leave to become head coaches, they just take every aspect of Bill and they incorporate it into the new team that they're coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody buys it. But he's the first ex-player drafted, developed his whole entire career with the same team and the same coach, then becomes an assistant coach. I think his default setting is going to mimic Bill in a lot of ways. And I think he's trying. And I think there's an aspect that he kind of knows it. So he's overcorrecting. I think that he's overcorrecting because he just leans Bill's way. Yeah, be you. Be your own self. Like, right, the other coaches weren't their own self. They tried to be Bill. Mayo is not going to – he's too unique. He's not going to try to be Bill's personality, but his – there's a lot that I think that he leans towards, and I don't know how he couldn't.
Well, and it's also a reminder that the whole – while it was a bad season and while it started to maybe go bad behind the scenes, there's a lot of what Bill Belichick taught that is rooted in winning football that Gerard Mayo can't avoid and go the other way on. But when you make it such a big deal that it's, oh, it's the new day down here, that's why some people are going to mock and make fun. Because, look, for better or worse, Christian, would you connect the phrase, do your job, to Bill Belichick as kind of the organizational catch-all? If everybody just does their job, we will win at a high level. It's as simple as can be, right? How does Mayo come up with that on his own? That he can own. That he can sell. Because, again, we have a lot of folks in the – people are bitching at us in the whole, hey, guys,
what?
It's just a butthurt that Bill's gone, da-da-da, and stuff like that. But, again, answer that question. Because we were looking at what happened in Atlanta with Raheem Morris in the first meeting. Raheem Morris walked in after an idiot. Raheem Morris walked in after a guy who got fired because he's really not head coach material in Arthur Smith. Gerard Mayo has to walk in the room after arguably the greatest who ever did it, whose messaging was sharp and on point all the time.
Everybody just do your job.
So what is going to be that thing that is the Gerard Mayo Patriots are about? You can't do your job. That got painted over.
Well.
Well, then there's that.
Comma.
Which is
that what it
usually
is?
Implied.
Right. It is what it is, comma, kinda.